ஓம் ஸ்ரீ குருப்போ நமஹ. ஹரிஹி ஓம். சதாசிவசமாரம்பாம் சங்கராச்சாரிய மத்யமாம் அஸ்மதாச்சாரிய பர்யந்தாம் வந்தே குரு பரம்பராம் சத்குரு சரணாரவிந்தாபியாம் நமஹ. ஆடியோ வீடியோ இஸ் ஃபைன். ஓகே, குட், தேங்க்யூ. கேனோபனிஷத் மந்திர 1. கேனேஷிதம் பததி பிரேஷிதம் மனஹ கேன பிராண பிரதம ப்ரைதி யுக்தஹ கேனேஷிதாம் வாசமிமாம் வதந்தி சக்ஷுஸ்ரோத்ரம் கவு தேவோ யுனக்தி. So we already saw the first mantra in the last webinar. The student asks the guru, Kena Ishitam, blessed by which principle? Kena Manaha Preshitam Patati, the mind objectifies the world. This is the first part of the question. And then the second part of the question is Prathamaha Pranaha Praithi. Pranaha means the Prana Tattva, the life principle, the pranic principle, the foremost Prana, Prathama Prana. கேன யுக்தா, பிளஸ்டு பை விச் பிரின்சிபிள் டஸ் தி பிராணிக் சிஸ்டம் ஃபங்க்ஷன். பிராணா இஸ் ஆல்சோ இனர்ட் பை நேச்சர், தென் வாட் மேக்ஸ் தி பிராணா சென்ஷியன்ட். தென் கேன இஷிதாம் இமாம் வாச்சம் வதந்தி, தி வாக் இந்திரியம், தி ஸ்பீக்கிங் ஃபேக்கல்டி, இட் இஸ் ஃபங்க்ஷனிங், இட் இஸ் நாட் நார்மலி சென்ஷியன்ட். Then what is that invisible principle by which the vag indriyam functions, even though it is inert? And finally, chakshuhu shrotram kavu devaha yunakti. What is that principle? Devaha means this sentient or effulgent principle which propels, which activates chakshuhu, the eyes, and shrotram, the ears. Even though the student mentions only two sense organs, we said we have to add all the other 5 jnanendriyas, 5 karmendriyas, pancha pranas, manas, buddhi, all of them. Ka u devaha yunakti. What is that extraneous invisible principle in the body? All scientific methods can never know what that is. So tell me, what is that? For which the teacher is going to give the answer through the entire Kenopanishad. Mantra 2. Shrotrasya shrotram manaso mano yad vachoha vacham savu pranasya pranaha chakshusas chakshuhu atimuchya dhiraha pretya asma loka tamrita bhavanti. This is the key mantra or the foundation mantra of Kena Upanishad, upon which all the entire rest of the Upanishad is built up. So what is the essence of this mantra, this sara of Kena Upanishad? If someone asks, Shrotrasya Shrotram. Through this mantra, the teacher answers the question, what is that principle through which the body is sentient? That principle is called Atma, whose nature is Chaitanyam. Chaitanya Swarupa Atma is the one that you are asking about, O student. Otherwise, it's called Chidatma. Chaitanyam, Chit, Jnanam, Vijnanam, Prajnanam, Samvit. As I told, all are synonymous terms, which means the conscious principle. So Chaitanya Atma is the principle which blesses the body-mind complex. Then naturally, the next question will be, what is that consciousness? For which we should remember the points that we have seen many times earlier. We saw up to this in the last webinar. Now, what is the consciousness? If you remember, we have defined it so many times. Consciousness is not a part, property or product of the body. And consciousness is an independent entity which pervades and enlivens the body. That consciousness is not limited by the boundaries of the body. That consciousness will continue to exist even after the body medium collapses. That consciousness cannot have transactions once the medium of transaction collapses. And even though the transaction ends, it is not the end of existence. Non-transacting consciousness is not non-existing consciousness. That non-transacting consciousness we call as avyakta chaitanyam, and when it is accessible through transaction, we call it vyakta chaitanyam. Therefore, either in the vyakta form or in the avyakta form, consciousness continues. So all this we have seen earlier, I am just only refreshing. To understand that, we have also seen the familiar example we have given many times earlier in previous lectures, the example of light. For example, I have my hand and the light falls on the hand. The light is not a part, property or product of the hand. And the light is an independent entity which pervades and illumines the hand. And light exists beyond the boundaries of the hand. And light continues even after I remove the hand. But the continuing light will not be perceptible if the reflecting medium is absent. So the non-perceptibility of the light is not non-existence of the light. This independent conscious principle, which is pervading and which is eternal, is the Devaha which you asked for. In the shloka, if you see, there is the word Devaha. That by the word Devaha, this is what you are asking me. This is the answer the teacher wants to give, but he gives it in a very peculiar language, which the language itself looks very ununderstandable to us. And what is that Atma? He says, Shrotrasya Shrotram. You are asking, what is that principle which blesses the ears to hear? That principle is called the ear of the ear. Shrotrasya Shrotram. The ear of the ear. If you want to differentiate, maybe we can say, we can use the capital E for the first ear and the small e for the second ear, because the second one is the ear lobe, is visible. So Atma is the ear of the ear. Then if asked, what is the principle which blesses the eyes? The eye of the eye. Similarly, what blesses, for example, this mic? The mic of the mic. So Shrotrasya Shrotram, it is the ear of the ear. Manasaha Manaha, it is the mind of the mind. Vachoha Vacham, it is the speech of the speech. Pranasya Pranaha, it is the prana of the prana. Chakshusas Chakshuhu, it is the eye of the eye. Up to this is the definition of Atma. And then in the sloka, Ati Muchya onwards, that is separate part. Now, what are we to understand by all these definitions? As we said earlier, ear of the ear is nothing but that conscious principle. And why is consciousness called the ear of the ear? Why the teacher chooses such a language? Because when we say it is ear of the ear, we communicate the idea that it is something distinct from the ear. For example, if I say this is the computer of money, the moment I put off, we communicate computer and money are different, even though there is some relationship. I own the computer. So by saying that Atma is ear of the ear, the teacher has communicated that Atma is that consciousness which is distinct from the ear. And at the same time, it pervades the ear. Remember the example again. Light is distinct from the hand. It also pervades the hand. So by saying Shrotrasya Shrotram, the teacher means that consciousness is different from the ear. It pervades the ear. And finally, and most importantly, consciousness is called the ear of the ear because of consciousness alone, ear is able to function as ear. The ear's earness is because of its hearing power. And therefore, the teacher says that it has the hearing power because of its sentiency. And that sentiency is because of Atma. Similarly, I is an I only when it has got the seeing power. And for the I's I-ness, it is because of the consciousness lent by the Atma. This mic's micness is because of what? Is because of the electricity. And therefore, we can define electricity as the mic of the mic. It's a subtle way of presentation. Therefore, what is consciousness? It is that which is different from every organ, which pervades every organ, and because of which alone every organ is that organ. And that is consciousness, that is the Devaha of the Shloka. And the next question will be, why did the teacher should put it in such a complicated language? He could have very easily said, it is the Chaitanyam, consciousness is the Chaitanyam. Why should he complicate all that? He does not say that consciousness is that principle, because then what will be our tendency? Then we will try to sit in meditation and look for that consciousness, which mistake we have been very successfully committing all along. When the teacher teaches that the Atma is the very self, still there are people sitting on meditation hoping to experience that Atma one day. Because our tendency is what? Is to objectify whatever is taught. Therefore, if I introduce Atma or Brahman, then the student will look for Atma or Brahman. And if I say it is Jnana Swarupa, like that person, you know, there's the Swamiji used to quote this example. Somebody said to Swamiji, Swamiji, 12 years I have been asking, who am I? Then after 12 years, I could silence my mind. And I came to blankness. Now I am still waiting. When will that Atma come? So that I can have direct perception. Unfortunately, that consciousness or Atma is never going to come, because it happens to be I myself. It is the very subject who is the consciousness principle you are looking for. And any number of janmas I may sit on meditation, I am never going to come across Atma or Brahman, and whatever I come across will not be Atma. Keno Upanishad itself is going to say later, every experience you get has nothing to do with Atma, because every experience deals with an object. Whereas we are talking about the subject, the experiencer principle. That is why the teacher does not give the answer directly as Chaitanyam or consciousness. Then the question might come, the teacher, instead of saying it is consciousness, he could have simply said, it is you, the subject. He could have simply said that. The teacher then is worried because the student may think of the word you as his body-mind complex, as Atma. So the student should be able to understand that I am that consciousness which is other than the body-mind complex. Then what is the best method to communicate that? Shrotrasya shrotram manaso manaha yate. And if we analyze what is the ear of the ear deeply, we will find that I am the one who is behind the ear and who I am functioning through the ear. That is why when I turn my attention elsewhere, for example, as you are listening to the class, you turn your attention elsewhere, then you have disidentified yourself with your ears. And so whatever I say, they don't get registered. So what is the ear of the ear now? Tell me. You are who are other than the ear, who makes the ear function because of your identification with the ear. Then you are that Atma, the conscious principle. So the teacher says indirectly. And the final essence we have to understand is what? I am the Atma, I am that consciousness, and I, the Atma, the consciousness, am different from all my organs. Having given this capsule this information, it will be then elaborated in all the other mantras. Now the teacher wants to talk about the benefit of this knowledge in the next part of the shloka, that is the Palashruti. By knowing I am not the ear, but the ear of the ear, and the mind of the mind, and the eye of the eye, what is the benefit that I get? He says, Dhiraha, the wise, discriminative people. And why we have to say this like that? When they use the word I, they take only the consciousness part of them as themselves, but not the body-mind complex. That is why they call it Dhiraha. Whereas the indiscriminate person, he takes the word I to mean both the body and the consciousness. Whereas the wise man takes body-mind conscious complex as an incidental medium for day-to-day transaction, which I use in the waking state to experience the world of physical and subtle objects. In sleep, what happens? Do I stop to exist? No, I continue to exist. The body and mind part, they stop functioning, they are resolved, they are relaxing. And what happens? The transactions with the world ends. The world ends. Thoughts, emotions, they all end. From that it is clear that all thoughts and emotions are incidental experiences that come when I temporarily use the body-mind complex. And if in another janma, you know, Vasamsi Jirnani, as Krishna said, I have, for example, an ant's body, the body of an ant, for example. Again, it is another incidental equipment, giving another incidental biography for me. Biographies come and go in keeping with the body-mind complex going. But what is my biography? My biography means my original nature. It is free from all incidental experiences. And therefore, it is free from emotions. It is free from fatness or leanness, tall, short, birth, death. All of them are not there. I have transcended the body and its limitations also. Therefore, Upanishad says, Dhiraha ati muchya. Muchya here means transcending. That is why the example is given. Suppose I say I am happy. Happiness belongs to the mind or the mouth. I say my mouth says I am happy. Does it belong to the mouth or the mind? The mind only. But who makes the statement? The mind or the mouth? Both are required. Mouth is required, and for mouth to function, mind is required. Mixture alone is using the word I. But we don't mean the mouth part at all when I say I am happy. Only the mind part we mean. When I say I am intelligent, the statement is made by the mouth, through the mouth, but I means only the intellectual part. Similarly, when I say I am the Atma, who makes the statement? Consciousness plus the body-mind complex makes the statement. But what do I mean by the word I? It is not the body-mind complex, but only the consciousness part. That I, which is the real I, am the Atma. But knowing the Atma, I transcend. Ati muchya. I transcend what? I transcend the body-mind complex. And transcending, again, is not a physical event, as we have seen a lot of times earlier, but it is an intellectual event in terms of understanding. So when I say, Aham Brahma Asmi, I am the all-pervading consciousness principle. Who says? This person, can he be all-pervading? This person is not all-pervading. No. And how can I say that? Because I have transcended. How? Using the body, I exclude the body in the meaning of the word I. Look at that. How beautiful it is. This intellectual segregation is called transcending. Using the body, I exclude the body in the meaning of the word I. Every jnani does that only. He will do everything the same way though, like eating, sleeping, all that he will do the same way, like everybody else. But when an Ajnani uses the word I, the consciousness includes the body-mind complex. When Jnani uses the word I, the consciousness excludes body-mind complex. When you include the body-mind complex, it is called the primary meaning of the word I. And if you exclude the body-mind complex, it is the secondary or implied meaning of the word I. So the Vachyartha I is mortal. This Vachyartha and Lakshyartha, all those we have seen earlier. Vachyartha is the primary meaning, Lakshyartha is the implied meaning. So the Vachyartha I is mortal and the Lakshyartha I is immortal. Therefore, Dhiraha Ati Muchya. So all these are all for explaining this Dhiraga and Ati Muchya. And this is called the Jivan Mukti. And how long will this Jivan Mukti continue? First of all, a Jnani is not bothered about that at all, because one is bothered only when one is over attached to the body, that the Jnani has transcended the body already. He looks at the body as one of the billions of bodies. For example, like wave in the ocean, which has to rise and set. There is no speciality at all about that. And therefore, it has to go through all the sixfold modifications that we have seen. Tatvabodha, asti, it was in a potent form. Jayate, it is born. Vardate, it grows. Viparinamate, it changes. Apakshiyate, it decays. And vinashyati, one day it pops off. So, he doesn't have any extra raga or dvesha towards this body. This transcending raga dvesha itself, that gives peace of mind. All mental disturbances are due to strong ragadvesha with respect to the body-mind complex. It is so powerful. It overflows then to whom? From me it overflows to my wife's body or to husband's body. Wife or husband is not for Atma. Atma has no such relationship at all. So all relations are only for this physical body. As Krishna said in the Gita, Adaschordvam prasutas tasya shakaha. Swamiji says, even the banyan tree of the Theosophical Society cannot spread that much like our family trees. But our ragadvesha, it spreads so much. And all of them, they all get objectified. Acceptance comes and there is a balance. This is called Jivan Mukti. It will continue as long as the prarabdha oil continues. The flame of life burns. When the prarabdha oil is exhausted, flame of life is put off. What happens then? Asmal lokat pretya. After death, in Mundaka Upanishad, this is called parantakala in Mundaka Upanishad. We will see that later. Te brahma lokeshu para antakale paramrutat parimuchyanti sarve. That parantakala, at the end of the prarabdha, what happens? If you remember, the sanchita karma is burnt by knowledge. Agami karma does not come at all. Prarabdha karma is exhausted. So all three types of karmas are gone. And what happens to them? Amrutaha bhavanti. They are one with the all-pervading Brahman. Like for example, the pot space. We have seen all those examples earlier. Like the pot space merging with the total space when the pot is broken. Pot space does not get destroyed. When pot is destroyed, it only merges. And what type of merger it is? It merges without any motion. Then what is merger here? The name pot space is withdrawn. You know, in Tamil there is a song, Kutadi, Kutadi, Potodai Tandi. This manba, this pot, the body part, you know, that's what finally he destroyed through Jnanam. Similarly, we call the person a Jivatma because of the enclosures availability. And when this pot is broken, the consciousness continues to survive. In the presence of the enclosure, it was called Jivatma. In the absence of the enclosure, it is called Paramatma. Therefore, Amritaha Bhavanti. They become one with Paramatma. This is called Videha Mukti. So, both Jivan Mukti and Videha Mukti are mentioned. So, this is a complete mantra because it gives the Atma Swarupam, it gives the Atma Jnanam, it talks about them, and it also talks about the two types of Atma Jnana Palam. Atma Jnana Palam number one is Jivan Mukti, and Atma Jnana Palam number two is Videha Mukti. Both are talked about. So, four big topics have been encapsulated in this one mantra. That is why we said it is like the essence of this entire Upanishad. And the teacher himself feels that this, the full grasping of this entire thing may not be there for the student. Therefore, the teacher himself elaborates all these four ideas in the following mantras. Let us read mantra number 3. Na tatra chakshur gacchati, na vag gacchati, no manaha, na vidmo na vijani maha, yataidat anusishyat. Here the teacher confesses that revealing this Atma is almost an impossible task. Any subject under the sun can be taught or communicated, somehow or the other. But Atma is one thing which is almost impossible to communicate. Why is this so tough? We have seen this before also. Until coming to Vedanta, I have dealt with all objective sciences. In case of all objective sciences, you hear first and then you form a concept, then you directly experience it. For example, that is the case about, for example, atoms, stars, emotions, all of them. Your emotions are objectifiable for you. And we come to Vedanta with that objectification orientation. And the teacher talks about Atma and Brahman, and the student tries to form a concept. What color it will be? And the teacher says, it is avarnam, colorless, ashabdam, asparsham, arupam, agandam, arasam. As even descriptions are given, he tries to conceive how it could be. The nearest one can conceive of is what? Is space. And he tries to experience Atma as space. So, dhyanam on space, meditation on space, they are all beautiful concepts, not false also. But unless we are extremely careful, any word we use may confuse the student. Suppose I negate all of them. It is not this, it is not that. Neti, neti, vachanehi, nigama, avochan. Upanishad itself tries to say so many methods. Asthulam, ananvakrasvam, adhirgam, alohitam, asneham, achayam. All those various things. Not this, not this, not this. And once you negate all the objective concepts, the student says, now I understand Atma. What is that? There is no vastu called Atma also, because we negated everything. After 15 years of learning, he says, there is no Atma. It is Shunyam. In Dakshinamurti Sotra, we have seen, Deham pranam apindriyan yapichalam buddhim cha Shunyam viduhu. Shunyam. After years of analysis, that's the conclusion he makes. Therefore, either he tends to objectify or tends to say, there is, it is not there at all. So what should the teacher do? He should teach in such a way that the student knows that Atma exists. And also he should not try to objectify that. He has to accept the Atma without trying to objectify. It is a real task. It's a real challenge for every Vedantic teacher. And therefore the teacher says, Tatra chakshuhu na gacchati. The eyes cannot objectify the Atma. Na gacchati means cannot objectify. It cannot go means cannot objectify. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha. Eyes represent all the pancha indriyani. That means Atma cannot be seen, cannot be heard, cannot be smelt, cannot be tasted. Ashabdam, asparsham, arupam, arasam, agandam. Jnanendriyas cannot objectify Atma. Then what about karmendriyas? Na vaak gachati, the organ of speech, it is not accessible even for words. Because for every word, we have got a corresponding concept. The concept we associate with a word only through an objective experience. How does the word, for example, if you say clock, how does it communicate to you? How does the knowledge arise in you? One time, sometime in life, you have seen the clock and someone has used it. I introduce the word, I introduce the object which you perceive, and I show the connection between the word and object. And seeing the shabda, artha, sambandha, the relationship between the shabda and the meaning, you have got the concept of every word. This is called in Vedanta vritta vyavahara. And thus every word one has to know only by experiencing a corresponding external object. So every word has an objective concept. Therefore, whatever word the teacher uses about Atma, the student will form an object either outside or a concept within inside. What is Atma? It is neither an object outside nor a concept inside. But it is you who are aware of the external object and internal concepts. That Atma is neither an object nor a concept. Therefore, words cannot objectify. And vak here represents all karmendriyas. Therefore, it is karmendriya agocharam. In Mundaka Upanishad, yet adreshyam agrahyam agotram avarnam achakshu shrotram yet apani padam nityam vibhum sarvagatam susukshmam tat avyayam yet bhutayonim paripashyanti dhiraha. The same idea is given here. It is not accessible to jnanendriyas and karmendriyas. Then what about mind? Because mind is very powerful. Mind can objectify things which jnanendriyas and karmendriyas cannot reach at all. For example, if you take love, is love visible? No. It is jnanendriya, karmendriya, agocharam, beyond jnanendriyas and karmendriyas. But still, it is within the field of your mind. Every emotion we can grasp. But what about Atma? It is not accessible to mind also. No manaha. So even the mind cannot objectify Atma. That is why we repeatedly say any experience is an object of the mind. Therefore, it has nothing to do with Atma. The Upanishad itself will tell later. So here, no manaha. And therefore, na vidmaha. The teacher puts a bombshell here. Oh student, I don't know the Atma also. Now the student may wonder, if you have told this earlier itself, I could not have taken you as my teacher at all. Why you wasted this much of time for me? You should have told this in the beginning itself, I don't know Atma. Na vidmaha. And not only I don't know, therefore only I cannot teach you also Atma. How can I teach what I don't know? Therefore, yatha anusishyat na vijanimaha. I do not know how anyone can communicate the Atma. Not only I, how can anyone communicate this Atma? Anusishyat kaschana purushaha, kaschidapi purushaha, kopi guruhu. So nobody can, I don't know also. Therefore, I don't know the Atma, so I cannot reveal that Atma also. So now the student may get ready to leave. Then the teacher says, this is the truth. But still, even the uncommunicable Atma has been somehow communicated by the scriptures, which has been coming down in the form of parampara, and that it can be communicated, it proved by my guru communicating to me by using a peculiar method. And when asked my guru, what did he say? Oh Sishyam, don't give me that credit. I was able to communicate to you because of my guru. And so on. Then where did it start? We have to read the Guru Parampara Shlokam. Narayanam Padma Bhuvam Vasishtam Shaktincha Tatputra Parasharancha வியாசம் சுகம் கௌடபாதம் மகான் கௌடபாதம் மகாந்தம் கோவிந்த யோகீந்திரம் அத்தாசிய சிஷ்யம் ஸ்ரீ சங்கராச்சாரியம் அத்தாசிய பத்மபாதஞ்ச ஹஸ்தாமலகஞ்ச சிஷ்யம் தம் தோடகம் வார்த்திகாரம் அன்யான் அஸ்மத் குருன் சந்ததம் ஆனதோஸ்மி. தி என்டையர் பரம்பரா அப் டு மை குரு இஸ் ரெஸ்பான்சிபிள் ஃபார் கிவிங் தட் நாலெட்ஜ். நாட் ஓன்லி தட் நாலெட்ஜ் பட் த மெத்தட் ஆஃப் கம்யூனிகேட்டிங் ஆல்சோ தே ஹவ் இம்பார்ட்டன்ட். அண்ட் ஓ சிஷ்யம் ஐ வில் சீ வெதர் த சேம் மெத்தட் வில் ஒர்க் ஃபார் யூ ஆல்சோ. அண்ட் வாட் இஸ் தட் மெத்தடாலஜி? இட் இஸ் கிவன் இன் தி நெக்ஸ்ட் மந்த்ரா. We will read mantra 4. Anya deva tadviditat ato aviditadadhi iti shushruma purvesham yenas tatvyacha chakshire. So in the previous mantra, the guru pointed out that words cannot explain the atma. Na vak gacchati, verbally not communicable. But still, there is a silver lining amidst the dark clouds here. There is this peculiar method of teaching by which even the uncommunicable can be communicated. Which is, what is that? Evam parampara praptam. It is not my own method, it is a tradition. That tradition is called sampradaya, the handing over method. Sampradiyate anena iti sampradayaha. The method of handing over the knowledge to the student. Therefore, now if you look at the second line, iti shushruma purvesham. I have got this peculiar method of communication from my forefathers, my gurus, purvesham, acharyana. And who is that guru? Ye tad naha vyacha chakshire. Who have successfully communicated that particular knowledge. Naha, to us, which I will teach you. Now, if you look at the first line, Tat viditat anya deva ato avidat adhi. The Vedantic teaching method is a very, very important sentence. One of the key sentences of Keno Upanishad. In fact, all the later shlokas are development of this one statement only. What does it mean? Atma is something other than any known object. That is the first part of the definition. That means what? After listening to this part, one has to negate everything else, everything in creation. Because everything you know come under what category? Known category. If I know a star, it is known. If I know earth, it is known. If I know moon, it is known. In fact, the entire creation comes under the category of known called viditam here. And the teacher says, the truth is something other than known. Not only the entire world is negated, even the physical body comes under something that is known to me. In fact, it is more intimately known to me than even the external world. I know every physical condition in my body. Therefore, body also comes under viditam. Therefore, Atma is other than the known body. And what about mind? Mind is still more intimately known to me. I know every condition of my mind. So, Atma is something other than the more intimately known mind also. Now, what will our mind do now? Once the teacher says, Atma is something other than the known, our mind will jump to the opposite part. We call it normally a dichotomous thinking. If the teacher says that Atma is other than the known, what will be our condition? If Atma is not known, then it should come under what category? It should come under unknown category. But the teacher says no. Moreover, don't conclude that. Ato means moreover, don't conclude that. Listen fully. Aviditad adhi. Adi means anyat, other than. Avidita means unknown. So, Atma is something other than unknown also. Aviditad adhi anyat. So, it is neither known nor unknown. Then what is the significance of this expression? We call something as known only known is straightforward. We call something as unknown when only when it is knowable. For example, we can take an example. Suppose I ask you a question. Please give me a list of which things you have not read. All unread things by you. Now, what all the things will be in that list? It will consist only of readable things alone. You will not say fruit or something else, juice or something. Why they are not included? Because fruit is not readable. Therefore, readable things alone, one can come put under unread category. Similarly, what will be unknown? Whatever is knowable only can come under unknown. By saying that Atma is not unknown, the teacher says it does not come under knowable category at all. I hope you are all with me. It is about past 9 o'clock. If it is knowable category, you can say that it is now unknown. If it is the knowable category, if you don't know, now what you will say? It is unknown now. But it is knowable at some future point in time. And when you know from the unknown, it will come under the known category. Therefore, by saying Atma is other than unknown, the teacher says Atma is not knowable. It is neither known nor knowable. Now, what will the student conclude now? If it is neither known nor knowable, it must be non-existent. Okay, that's what he will conclude. But that conclusion he cannot make because the teacher has already said there is an Atma, that isness establishes its existence, which is Shrotrasya Shrotram Manaso Manaha. He has already told that. And knowing which, one will get liberation. That's also he told. So we come to know it is existence. Now from the definition, we have got now a puzzle. What is that puzzle? Which is existence, which is neither known nor knowable. If you analyze that, it can be only one thing. You know what is that actually. The knower I alone can come under the category of other than known and other than knowable. And it is existence. Because knower cannot come to known category because any known thing becomes what? Becomes an object. Anything that known should be an object. Whereas knower is what? Knower is the subject. And so knower will be ever different from the known category. Knower will not come under the knowable category also. Since anything knowable is what? Is that which? That will come under known category later at some other point in time. Therefore, known is also object. Knowable also is object. Knower is the only thing which is never an object. And therefore, Atma is the knower principle. I hope I have not confused you too much. Which is never an object of knowledge. Either in the past or in the present or any time in the future also. Since Atma is ever the knower, it is neither known nor knowable. So the very attempt to know the Atma is the basic mistake every student commits. To say, I want to know the Atma is the basic mistake. So by this definition, the teacher has pointed out, Tat Tvam Asi, that Mahavakya, that Brahman is nothing but you, the knower principle. And why should knower try to objectify the Atma? Because there is no need. It's a knower principle. Therefore, Anyadeva Tadviditat Ato Aviditat Adhi. It is never an object of knowledge. It is ever the subject of knowledge. This is going to be elaborated in all the later shlokas. Shloka 5. We have time, I guess.
Yadvachanabhyuditam Yena vak abhyudhyate tadeva brahma tvam vidhi nedam yaditam upasate.
These are all very powerful mantras. Here he gives the definition of Atma. Is never known and knowable. You should never attempt to know the Atma. the very attempt is a mistake. And what is the reason? Because ever Atma is the knower principle. In Sanskrit, knower is called Pramata. Pra plus ma root to know. And the instrument with which different things are known, that is called Pramanam. Pramata, Pramanam. Ears, eyes, tongue, they are all called Pramanams. And to enhance the use of sense organs, for example, if you use a telescope, microscope, they also come under the list of the variety of Pramanam only. So, Pramata uses Pramanam. And by using the Pramanam, he needs to know varieties of things. And everything that is known is called Prameyam. So, Shabda is an object known through the instrument ear, Pramanam. So, Shabda becomes Prameyam. Similarly, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha, they are all Prameyam. In fact, whatever we discover, everything is Prameyam. Scientists have been inquiring into the microscopic world of atoms and the macroscopic world of galaxies and stars, all come under Prameyam only. And in this Prameyam list, which is very, very big list, there is one thing which will never come under Prameyam list, however powerful the Pramanam can be. And what is that? The Pramata eye. Even with the most powerful microscope, I cannot see my own eyes because the eyes come under the seer category. And it is on this side of Pramanam, whereas Prameyams are all on the other side. Therefore, Pramata will be eternally behind the Pramanam. It will never come under the other side of Pramanam. Therefore, Pramata can never be known. So, in the Pramata, Pramanam, Prameyam, Triputi, Pramata can never be known. We can extend this argument to the experience also. There are three things. The experiencer, experiencing instrument, and the object of experience. This Triputi is there. In the experienced list, which will never come, the experiencer will never come. And if Brahman is the very experiencer, how can that Brahman be ever experienced? For example, a person studies Upanishads, let's say, for 25 years. He sits in meditation and waits for the experience of Brahman to come. Will it come? Even if he gets a mysterious experience, whatever he experiences will come under what? Will come under Prameyam only. It will never have the Pramata, the experiencer. Therefore, Pramada can never be known through a Pramanam. Okay, then the question can come, if Pramada can never be known through a Pramanam, that is, Pramada can never become a Prameyam, what is the proof for the existence of Pramada? We say, every knowledge of every Prameyam is possible only because of what? The Pramada. So, Pramata is never known, but everything is known because of the presence of Pramata. Therefore, Pramata is evident in the knowledge of every object. It is like, for example, I don't see my eyes now. There is no mirror in front also. I don't see my eyes. But suppose I get a doubt whether I have eyes or not. What will be your consolation to me? Even though I don't see my own eyes, every perception is a proof for my eyes. I don't need a particular perception to prove my eyes. Every perception is proof. I don't need a particular experience to know the Pramata. In fact, the Pramata is ever evident. Every experience is a proof for Pramata. Prameyam keeps on varying. The instrument can keep on varying. But in and through the varying Prameyams and Pramanams, one thing is ever evident. And what is that? The presence of Pramata. And so the Upanishad says, number one, Pramata cannot be known. At the same time, Pramata need not be known through a particular experience. Why? Pramata is evident in every experience. You don't need any particular experience. It is evident in every experience. That ever evident knowing or experiencing principle is called Atma or Brahman. In fact, Atma tries to prove everything, and that need not be proved. Why? Because it exists in the very attempt of proving everything. Therefore, why should I try to prove the prover of everything? Therefore, the teacher says, Pramata is not known through eyes, but the eyes themselves function because of Pramata. Similarly, Pramata need not be experienced through the mind, because the mind itself is experienced because of Pramata. So, never attempt to know the Atma. In short, this is another big bombshell. Self-realization is dropping the desire for self-realization. Look at Vedanta. We have been always thinking, you know, Vedanta is what? Moksha is self-realization and all that. Self-realization is dropping the desire for self-realization with the knowledge that self need not be realized. Because self is ever evident in and through every experience. Now if you look at the mantra, Yet Vacha Anabhyuditam. Atma is never objectified through the Vak Pramanam or Shabda Pramanam. If objectified through it, then Atma would have become a known object and should have become a Prameyam. On the other hand, Yena Vak Abhyudyate. Abhyudyate, because of the Atma alone, the very Vak Indriyam is valid and it is speaking now. Otherwise it won't speak. A pramanam enjoys pramanam status only because of pramata. So he says, Tadeva Brahma Tvam Vidhi. O student, you understand, Tvam Vidhi, the knower principle alone is called Brahman. Tadeva Brahman. Okay, here we have to make a note, because these are all places where confusions can come. If it doesn't come to you, I will cause it and create and try to solve it. We said the knower principle is called Atma. Okay, the knower principle, the conscious being, it enjoys the status of knower. How long will it enjoy that status of knower? Only when there is some object to be known. So the knower status is from the standpoint of the Prameyam. I am called the knower principle. But suppose I know something, I am called the knower, conscious knower principle, and there is a known. Now suppose I stop the knowing operation. For example, I close my eyes so that I cannot see anything. I close my ears, I cannot hear anything. In fact, I stop all the pramanams, all my instruments. Then what happens? Do I become non-existent? Because I got the knower status, pramata status, because something is known. Now all knowing things are all cut off. Then does it mean that I become non-existent? I don't become non-existent. The knower principle drops what? The knowerhood. And it will be the conscious, it will be the conscious principle or the knowledge. So the knowerhood alone is gone. Therefore, pramata in his original nature is the pure consciousness. In this consciousness alone, that enjoys the knower status. Knower is a status. Pramata is a status. Knowerhood. When there is an object to be known only, that knowerhood comes. For example, now I enjoy the teacher status. Because of what? Because of your grace. If there are no students, I cannot. Where is the teacher? The teacher enjoys the teacherhood because of the student. And when the students are gone, who is there? Teacher minus teacherhood is there. Teacher minus teacherhood. Similarly, Atma has got two status. Its intrinsic status is called consciousness, and its incidental status, that is called Pramata. Therefore, what is Atma now? Atma is consciousness by itself, and the very same Atma enjoys the knower status during transaction. When I transact, I get that status. That is why in the waking state, I am a knower. In the dream status, I am knower. In the sleep state, I am not knower, but pure consciousness. When the world comes, I am called knower. When the world goes, in deep sleep, world is resolved. I am pure conscious principle. And therefore he says, Tadeva, that consciousness which becomes knower with pramanam and which is not a knower in the absence of pramanam, that consciousness alone is called Brahman. Tadeva Brahma. This is called Mahavakyam, actually. Kevana Upanishad has got a lot of Mahavakyas. It's full of Mahavakyas. The first mantra is what? Shrotrasya Shrotram. That is a Mahavakya. And in the fourth mantra is also called a Mahavakyam. Anya Deva Tad Viditad. That also Mahavakyam. And the mantras 5, 6 and 7, they are also Mahavakya mantras. Because in all of them, the teacher is revealing Brahman as the very knower. That's why they are called Mahavakya mantras, the subject principle. Therefore, Tadeva Brahma Tvam. You are that Brahman. Iti Vidhi. May you know that. Then what about God? That question may come. Okay, now we have told you are Brahman. I am Brahman. You are Brahman. We are all Brahman. What about God then? Because I have been worshipping the God all the time. I have been a Shiva Bhakta, a Krishna Bhakta. Is that Krishna, Rama, etc. or Brahman or not? That question will come. Then we ask the question back, what do you mean by Krishna or Rama? Do you mean Rama as an object of your experience or as the very consciousness in you? That is the question we will ask back. If Krishna is a person in front, then that Krishna will come under Viditam or other than Viditam. One of these. See, it could be either under Viditam or other than Viditam and Aviditam. It could be one of them. Krishna will come under the object of experience. Because it can be either Viditam or Viditam or Aviditam. So if it is Viditam, object of experience. So Krishna will come under Prameya status, Prameya Vastu. And we clearly said Brahman is something other than known. Therefore, experienced Krishna or Rama are not Brahman. Upanishad itself says, I am not telling, Upanishad says, Yadu idam upasate tadu na Brahma. Whatever you have been worshipping all along, that is not Brahman at all. Therefore, every upasya devata is not ultimate reality. Then why should the sastras introduce various devatas? Well, that question will come. For that, our answer is, all the gods are introduced as a stepping stone only. Therefore, all gods we worship are only mithya. But without those gods, we can never come to satyam. Therefore, Krishna or Shiva will become satyam only we understand Krishna as I, the Pramatha. Thus, in the beginning stage, Krishna is object of knowledge. In the final stage, Krishna is subject of knowledge. In the beginning stage, the bhakti is called Dvaita Bhakti. And in the final stage, that bhakti is called Advaita Bhakti. In Advaita Bhakti alone, God is real. In all other bhaktis, God comes under non-real or mithya only. Who says? As I told, it's not me, but the Upanishad itself says, Yadu idam upasate. Whatever you are objectifying here, na, they are not. Then what is reality? Atma. And when will I see that Atma? Never ask that question when I will see Atma. Fortunately or unfortunately, you are that Atma. That's what Acharya wants to communicate in this mantra. So we will see the rest of the mantras from the next webinar. Yo vedadau swara prokto vedante cha pratishtitaha tasya prakriti leenasya ya parasa maheshwaraha. Sri Krishna arpanamastu. Narayana. questions? Anybody raised any hand? It looks. Anybody typed any questions? Thanks for the next lecture. Okay, thank you. All right, there is no questions typed and no hands raised either. Okay. If there are no more discussions or questions, we can stop for the day and continue next week. I am going to sign off now. Sri Ram.